All right. This is a Las Vegas Sun sports podcast, The Rebel Room. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Mike Grimala. It's tournament week. It's a opportunity for, I guess, the men to do the unthinkable and win 4-4 to make the NCAA tournament, which I would say is an extreme long shot. And of course, the Lady Rebels 30-2 entering play. They just got done beating that team up north, UNR. They are two wins away from the automatic bid of the NCAA tournament. A great year for Coach LaRock and Essence Booker and Desi Young and Justice Etheridge and all those locals. Durango, Spring Valley, Desert Oasis, Centennial in order. Michael, thank you for joining me. Thank you for joining us. First things first, you were in Reno. Jackie Johnson, 15 seconds left on the shot clock. No worries, 40-footer. He'll take it and make it, baby. How about Jackie?
What a shot. Is that the shot of the year? That's going to be the shot of the year for the men's basketball team. I know E.J. Harkless just made a buzzer beater to beat Air Force, but that was kind of an ugly play. It was, you know, a put back and it was a scramble. It wasn't the prettiest buzzer beater. So I think that Jackie Johnson has got to be the shot of the year, just pulling up from that deep to win the game against a rival on the road to complete the season sweep.
But if he misses that, Michael, everybody's like, what is that guy doing? Why is Kevin have him in the game? What kind of coaching is going on there? Why would you let the 11th player on the team shoot the ball from sparks?
It was a very Jackie Johnson shot because he hadn't scored in double figures since like December 2nd. This was the second most minutes he's played in the last 3 months. He's a guy who's been buried on the bench, but because so many things happened, Keyshawn Gilbert got ejected like 5 minutes into the game. EJ Harkless fouled out in overtime. So there's your starting backcourt is gone. Cam Burris was playing big minutes. I don't think Kevin Kruger wanted Cam Burris to take that shot. So you're kind of running out of like guys that can give you offense, and Jackie Johnson can do that when he's playing well. And you saw in overtimes, like drive layup, pull up for three. He can get hot like that. He's not going to stay hot, but he can get hot like that for a minute or two at a time. And he did it at the perfect time.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that, you know, UNLV in a season where I think they're 18-12 as we speak, in a season of some losses that quite honestly were ugly, including last week, a 30-point loss to Utah State. And, you know, they've also stolen some games, the Air Force win and then the win against UNR on Saturday. But I tell you what, feeling a lot better about Kevin Kruger right now than I maybe would have a week and a half ago. He's 4-0 against UNR.
That's big.
That's big. I mean, that means something. I guess the only problem still for me, not knowing how this weekend's going to turn out. Of course, they open the league tournament with Air Force. If they beat Air Force, they get Boise. Here's another year of UNLV finishing in not even the middle of the league, at the bottom of the league where they have to play in the play-in game, and another year without the tournament.
I know you're saying, you know, you feel better about Kevin Kruger and where the team is. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute and throw this. I get the feeling like that win at UNR got everybody people were ready to jump off the bandwagon and write this team off. I feel like they got a lot of people back for the Mountain West tournament by winning that game. But if you go back to the beginning of February, you know, UNLV's last two wins, they won that game in Reno. They were down by 8 with 2 minutes left. They went on an 8-0 run in a span of 50 seconds to tie it up. It was a miracle win. And then they beat Air Force and they were down by 3 with 10 seconds left. And they got two baskets. They got a steal and a hoop at the last second. Those are two miracle wins. If those two games had gone the other way, mm-hmm. You're looking at a team that closes the regular season on a 7-game losing streak. They would have lost their last 7 games if not for those two last second complete miracle wins. So I think people are a little bit more excited about going into this tournament, but does that cover up what we've seen for the last month of the season? Like, how do you weigh that? Are you looking at the big picture and saying like, this team is, man, they've really struggled? Or are you buoyed by the win and saying like, they're something, you know, maybe they can pull that off four more times?
I mean, for me, and I think I have the mentality of a fan, is that gives you hope, right? Hope is a dangerous thing.
There is hope.
There's hope. I would say before Saturday, after losing by 30 to Utah State, there was no hope. But if you look at all the teams that are converging here in town to play in the Mountain West tournament, I still think that there's only one team that UNLV doesn't match up well against, and only one team that they're certain to lose to. I think they lose 10 out of 10 to San Diego State.
Agreed.
Every other team in the league, I think it's 5-5, 6-4, you know, maybe 7-3 in UNLV's advantage with like against an Air Force. But you're telling me they play Boise on Thursday in the quarters if they beat Air Force. What's the line going to be? Boise 2, Boise 3?
I think it would be higher than that. I think it would probably be like 5 or 6.
But why?
Boise, the last time they played in the Thomas and Mack, Boise just dominated the game. I think they won by 20 or 18. I know UNLV just played them a little bit tighter up in Boise, but Boise's just they're also more consistent. Like, UNLV is a team that's capable of losing.
Does Boise have better players? They're more consistent. Again, I'm not a UNLV apologist here. Finishing towards the bottom of the league, missing out on the NCAAs again. It's a cardinal sin that's unforgivable. Go ahead.
When I say inconsistent, I'm not talking about your run-of-the-mill inconsistency. I'm talking about UNLV's – who's their second-best player? Would you say it's Keyshawn Gilbert is their second-best player? He just got ejected in the first 5 minutes of a game at UNR. And that wasn't even his worst performance of the Mountain West season. Like, he's had games worse than that. He's had games better, but he's a guy who's capable of giving you 5 minutes and getting ejected. And like, you just don't know which extreme it's going to be. And that's their second best player. The further you go down the bench, the more volatile it gets. Like, Luis Rodriguez was great in Reno, 14 points, 13 rebounds, game tying layup, clutch steal. He could also score 2 points against Boise State and you never hear from him again. So like, it's just so.
I mean, I think everything needs to go right for them to be in the conversation, but you're talking like Boise State's 8 out of 2 against UNLV if they played 10 times. And I just know that you got to remember, dude, in December, they beat Hawaii at the Dollar Loan Center. We were both at the game. I think they moved to like 11-0, right? They were threatening to be ranked. You came in, you pitched a story about talking about, should Kevin Kruger get a contract extension, right?
They were
2 months later, it's like, hey, call U-Haul, help the guy pack his bags.
No, it's not like that.
That's inconsistent, Mike.
I've got – what they were doing was working back then. It's not working now. They're searching now in a way that they weren't searching back then. I think they're capable of beating Boise State? Yes. Do I think it's going to be like a 2-point spread or 1.5 or like some close one possession? I don't think these teams are one possession apart, because I think with Boise State, you know what Shaver is going to do. You know what Degenhardt is going to do. You know what you're going to get from Max Rice. Those guys are going to give you exactly what you expect from them. And UNLV, aside from EJ Harkless giving you 22 points, I don't know what anyone else on the roster is going to give. I don't know what anyone else is going to play like. David Mwaka could be great. He could be benched. Gilbert could be in, he could be out. It's just,
To me, that inconsistency goes back to their roster formation, right? I think Keyshawn Gilbert started like gangbusters and he's leveled off. And when they were winning, some of those guys that have been hot and cold like Rodriguez were hot. And then they just, for some reason, they leveled off. And when you build a team knowing that you're going to have to play defense to win games, which is basically what they came out and said. They said, hey, we built a tough team. We're going to be, we want to be a tie game with 2 minutes to go. That's where we're going to feel most comfortable. Well, to get there, you got to have somebody that could score. And outside of Harkless, they didn't have a consistent offensive player. And that goes to roster creation. I mean, you basically wipe the roster clean in the offseason. You kept Gilbert, McCabe, and that's it, right? And Cam Burst. And you handpicked the people that you wanted to bring in. And here we are.
That is a big factor, I would say. And then I think just the fact that they had to switch midstream, you know, they went from that pressure defense early in the year where they switched everything and they were getting so many turnovers and everything was great. And we've just seen Mountain West teams not have the same problems matching up with their defense. You know, they UNLV has had to back off. They're not applying as much pressure. They're not heating up the ball, as Kevin Kruger likes to say. They're not speeding teams up. Teams are more comfortable playing against them. And that's just kind of throwing them for a loop. Like you said, they're 100% defensive minded. So when that defensive identity wanes or there's some cracks in the foundation, it affects how they play on offense. It affects everything. So those are the issues they're facing right now. I think they'll beat Air Force. They can give Boise State a game. I'd have to look at the bracket after that. But I think that the like I was saying, the UNR win, that win at least gives you hope that they can replicate that intensity and that effort and that competitiveness against Boise State when they face them in the Mountain West tournament, because that's what it's going to take. Like if UNLV shows up in that way, they can take Boise State down to the wire 64-63, and you know who's got the ball, who makes a play, and who gets the calls. I could see that happening. It's going to take their best game, and I just don't know how many times we'll see UNLV's best game in these 4 days.
If anything, it gives them, instead of losing by 30 and then going and losing to Reno and then having your season on the line against Air Force, it now gives them that boost that maybe they can go on a run. And remember, this just wasn't any road win, right? UNR is projected to be in the tournament. They hate UNLV. They sold out the gym. It was an all-day event. There's nothing else to do in that crappy town. Their students talk crap the entire game. UNLV was up 11-0. Then they were down by 8 with 2 to go. And Jackie Johnson from Duquesne hit a half-court shot with 16 seconds left on the shot clock. I mean, I just think that they went in there with that like warrior mentality, gives them just a little bit of a springboard. Now, the one thing, it's weird. A colleague in the news media put out an interview from like 03 or 04 or 05 or 15 years ago with an interview with Fran Fursella, who you know now is like the ESPN international guy, right? Their basketball guru, who at the time was the coach of New Mexico. And back in the day, the Mountain West tournament got standing room only from New Mexico fans, standing room only from BYU fans, standing room only from Utah, standing room only from UNLV. And Fran was like explaining how everybody in the league hated having the tournament here because it gave UNLV an unfair edge. Is that the case still?
No, I was just, it goes into a point that I wanted to make from being up in Reno for that game. I think that playing in front of that hostile crowd, because it was sold out. The student section was going nuts. They were yelling, you know, individual taunts at the players. The players were going back at them. I think it made UNLV play harder, play more focused, and play better. I think it's been lost at least on me. I mean, we know that the attendance is down at Thomas and Mack. We know it's not the venue it's been for UNLV home games, but I don't think we realize the toll that takes on the players. There's no atmosphere in that building. They don't get up for the games like they would. They might have a better chance of winning the Mountain West tournament if they played those four opponents on their courts, like as true road games. Like if they might have a better chance of beating Boise if that game was at Boise State on Thursday. You know what I'm saying? Because even a hostile crowd is better than no crowd or a dead crowd in your favor.
It gives them an opportunity to feel like it's us against the world.
Yes, the players were fired up. Like, they were really playing hard. You could see it on the bench was very into the game. It was a different intensity from the sideline than it would have been if that game was played at the Thomas and Mack Center, and it played out exactly the same way. So I think that's something that sort of I've lost sight of just because I'm used to the lower crowds now and the less intensity inside the building at the Mack. But maybe some of that will come back in the Mountain West tournament. We'll have to see what these crowds look like, you know. But I think a bigger crowd, even if it's not completely behind UNLV, might actually help them a little bit. And we might see that competitiveness and that compete level that we saw at UNR. They might have a better chance of that.
Yeah, and I think along the way too, Mike, there might be that desperation that if you lose, you're basically done playing basketball.
They have some guys who are playing there. Any game could be their last for EJ Harkless, Jordan McCabe. Like if they lose, like this could be the end of their careers. I know they both might have options, you know, playing pro ball somewhere. But for college, yeah, this is whatever they lose, they're done. So, yeah, it's maybe you see some. Although Harkless is pretty much giving it everything he's got every night. I'm not sure if there's another level he can get to. But the rest of these guys, if they play, they've got to give that same, they've got to translate that fire that we saw on the road on Saturday to the Thomas and Mack Center for four straight days, which is tough to sustain that.
Yeah. What really baffles me, Mike, is it seems like every year we go on this podcast for both football and basketball, and we try to find a path for UNLV to either get bowl eligible or to make the NCAA tournament. And despite UNLV being in the best city in the Mountain West, having the best resources in the Mountain West with the stadium, the practice facility for football, the Thomas and Mack and Mendenhall for basketball, year in and year out, they're behind everybody. And that just boggles my mind how not one time in whatever amount of years could they put together a team that wins six football games or a team that makes the NCAA tournament. I mean, your coaches are the highest paid, your resources are the best, you're in the best city, you've got the best brand name, and Wyoming's got a better chance to go to the tournament. Or, you know, San Jose State wins the Mountain West football champion. I mean, come on, does it not get old? And then you saw news just this weekend that the Pac-12 was looking to expand with, like, I don't know, Chaffee Junior College, University of Occidental, and, you know, Texas Southern or something. We're not even in the conversation for the Pac-12.
I will say, continuing the theme of hope, you see how easy it is to turn it around with one hire. Like, if you hire Lindy LaRocque and you nail that hire, you can dominate the league. Like, the men's team can do that if they get the men's basketball equivalent of Lindy LaRocque.
Yeah, I think the difference with that is girls, I mean, with no offense, Mike, women's basketball, it's a one-bid league. There's not many great teams.
And it is, but
UNLV's got two great players in Booker and Desi. Now, granted, LaRocque's coached them up well, and they're they've gotten better and they're performing at their peak, but I just think that there's so much talent in the Mountain West. It's tougher for the men. In my opinion,
it's tougher, but not 10 years tougher. like Kevin Kruger's will be going into his third year. Next year, we should see a substantial leap. Like if they're not, you know, 24, 25 wins, like in that, if they're not in the conversation on Selection Sunday and we're not talking about seeding and where they could be going in bracketology, that's a huge, that's going to be a huge misstep for the program. Like 3 years is, you've got to get it going in that amount of time,
right? Who's even going to be on the team next year? I mean, we're looking at a whole new cast of characters.
We are, but I do think they built some credibility. They've got credibility in the transfer portal now. I think they've shown that they can take Power Five players, not cast offs, because I don't, that's an insult to the players, but guys who were, you know, fringe starters, mid-level guys like EJ Harkless, Luis Rodriguez, they can come here and be stars. You know, they can come here and start every game, play 30 minutes. EJ Harkless is all Mountain West second team. He scored 20 points a game in conference. Like, they can take that into the transfer portal and get guys better than EJ Harkless and Luis Rodriguez next time around. At least that's the plan. And then who knows? Then you've got to, if you score on DJ Thomas, or if Brooklyn Hicks comes in and he's better than you thought right away, or right, you get some contribution from your freshman class, it could turn around. You, like, that's what they've got to hope for, because I don't think they're bringing in, you know, some superstar that's going to turn everything around by himself. So it's going to be incremental improvements.
Sean Gilbert, your point guard?
I think so. If he stays.
Where would he go?
I don't know.
I mean, he ain't going to like Arizona State or a Power Five school.
You don't think so? You don't think he'll have suitors that would take him?
Did you see the way he played? I mean, he might go to be the third point guard.
I think he would have, if he went into the transfer portal, and even if he doesn't, you know, behind the scenes, I'm sure that he'll have programs that would be interested in talking to him and recruiting him a little bit if he went into the transfer portal.
Like, which programs?
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know. But
mind you, 10 minutes ago, you detailed how he got ejected in 5 minutes, and that wasn't even his worst performance of the year. Now all of a sudden, he's the backup point guard at Kansas in the national championship game.
But you also have to look at the trajectory. He went from like an 8-minute-a-game freshman who didn't shoot ever, he was just a defensive specialist, to in his second year, he started every game except one when he was late at Christmas. He started every game. He upped his scoring to like 12, 13 points a game. He still plays good defense. He leads the team in assists. He's had a good second year. He's just super inconsistent because he's a sophomore. He's like a 19-year-old sophomore. You would think that next year you'll see the ceiling of Gilbert this year, but instead of getting it for 12 and 15 games, you'll get it for 30 games, I think is the improvement. I think a lot of teams would take that and would gamble on it. So he's a guy that I question when the season ends, what are his intentions? Is he going to stay or is he going to go? Same thing with Luis Rodriguez, who has a year of eligibility. He's going to stay or go. Mowaka, stay or go. Like, those are guys you can probably replace and you can probably aim higher in the transfer portal, but you might be better off keeping them and trying to keep that as your baseline and then working your way up. I mean, I don't know.
Even last year, they had Bryce Hamilton, the league player of the year, right? The guy's flirting with being in the NBA. They got Donovan Williams, who is in the NBA, right? Yeah. And they finished seventh in the league.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, if Donovan Williams had stayed for one more year and you just add him to this current roster, you're in the NCAA tournament. Like, that's a Mountain West contender. You're in the tournament. Like, that's a player that would be great for them. So they were that close. Like, and Donovan Williams was a guy who kind of, he went through the process. He left the door open. He might've wanted to come back. He was close to coming back. I mean, I think he was ticketed for the NBA the whole way, but he did leave the door open. So if a couple things had gone differently and he came back, Kevin Kruger would already be there in his second year and this whole conversation would be different. So while I'm saying, oh, they could have ended the season on a 7-game losing streak, things are not going well, they needed so many pieces in the portal, they were also pretty close to having a really good team. So the margins are thin. That's what I guess is what I'm saying. So Kevin Kruger, he's got to show, they've got to be much, much better next year. Nope. But I don't think it's that big of a leap to see them get that much better.
Not to mention they went 11-0 by beating basically Washington State and Occidental JC. No offense to them.
Well, they beat Southern Miss, who ended up having a pretty decent season. I'd have to go and look it up.
They beat Dayton, that was ranked, Washington State. Dayton,
Minnesota.
It was a good. They did good. I mean, they just awful in league play is what it counts to.
Yeah, they got to Mountain West play, and they kind of got figured out on the defensive end. So, but like I said, if you add one player, if you keep everyone that you can keep, you replace Harkless, and you add one more good player to the mix, you can take that team into the Mountain West next year and shoot for a top third of the league finish. So, yeah, we'll see. It's the only, like, as long as they beat Air Force on Wednesday, I feel like they're going into the offseason with at least a little bit of hope.
19-14
would be the overall record. Wait, what's 19-14?
That would be their record.
They're 18-12 now, so that would be 18-13 if they lose that game. Yeah,
they got to be. I mean, I don't know. All I know is that next Thursday, a lot of people go watch that NCAA tournament. And it's always fun to watch your team participate in it. And instead, I'm just praying that, you know, nobody wins by more than 30 in the national championship game, so we can keep that record.
Okay, so let me ask you that. I do think that they should stick with Kruger in the short intermediate term. I think he should get another year or two. I think they are moving in the right direction, even though it was rocky this year. Where do you stand on Kruger in terms of what do you need to see next year? How confident are you with him at the helm? Just give me your take on Kruger after seeing him.
So win or lose last on Saturday against Reno, I thought he should have got three, if not four. UNLV has got a problem of stability with coaches of men basketball and acting too prematurely. I thought Menzies got fired too early. Kevin, you hired the guy knowing that this was his first time being a head coach, knowing that he had characteristics like his dad, and his dad is a Hall of Famer, college Hall of Famer. You know, you're basically getting Kevin and Lon. There's no reason to hit the reset button to further hurt the stability, to pay off Kevin as well as the new guy, who's then going to have to go into the portal and try to get seven or eight guys and won't be as good of a coach as Lon. So I just think Kevin deserves two more years. He's a rebel. He's one of us. He knows how important the program is to Southern Nevada, and we should be embarrassed for even talking about replacing him after this year, because he deserves better simply because of what he's done for us. And somewhere along the way, we got to stop paying two coaches at a time to finish seventh in the Mountain West. My opinion.
That's fair. I'm with you on that. I don't think his seat is all that hot right now. I mean, if they tank next year, then maybe you can talk about it. I think he's pretty solid now. I don't think he's got to look over his shoulder. I think he's good. But next year, I would want to see them ascend the Mountain West rankings. Like, sixth or seventh place is not going to cut it. Like, next year, if they're in the same place next year, middle of the pack, then you've got to start, I guess, asking those questions. But for now, I think program is at least looking. They've got a plan and a direction. I would just notice something on their schedule. When I was talking before about how they may be better off on the road because of, like, just having a better atmosphere. At home this year, UNLV 9-7. On the road for road games and neutral games, 9-4. So they are statistically – they have been better on the road this year. That's an indictment of the crowd at the Thomas and Mack Center. That's a direct indictment of you, the listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that they'd be better off playing the Tom in the Henderson Pavilion or whatever they call the arena. They're never going to get 18,000 game in and game out for UNLV basketball again. The interest is just, you know, and the team has just decreased. You know, we've talked about it till we're blue in the face, but whatever 10 straight years of finishing seventh does that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So what's your official prediction, or how do you see this week going for the basketball team?
I mean, I'm kind of like you. I see the girls, you know, winning and the men losing a close one to Boise State.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's how I see it going, too. I think the women are pretty much going to roll. Like, they won by 40 today. I think they're the best team in that league. And then the men, they survived a close call against Air Force just a week ago, which will help them not look past Air Force this time around. So I think they've got that game pretty much well in hand. I can't see them beating Boise State in any kind of game that goes down. Like, in the last few minutes, that's close. So yeah, probably like a 5-6 point loss to Boise. And then we start looking ahead to the off season and looking at who they're recruiting, who's in the transfer portal, who's leaving, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it'll be, surely there'll be 3 carryovers and 11 new guys. So it is what it is. But Mike, appreciate you joining me on the Rebel Room. You are the Rebel Room. And everybody, thank you for listening to Las Vegas Sun Sports Talk.